This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is Well, Well, Well. Sex, health and well-being in our LGBTI communities.
Presented by Joy's sponsor, Thorn Harbour Health.
You are listening to Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9, where each and every week we discuss the sexual health, mental health and general health and well-being of our LGBTI communities, brought to you by Thorn Harbour Health. The practice of gay conversion therapy will be banned in Victoria after the Health Complaints Commissioner found overwhelming evidence it does serious and long-term harm to those who receive it. Last year, a landmark report conducted by La Trobe University and the Human Rights Law Centre highlighted disturbing testimonies from people who went through a form of gay conversion therapy, some willing, others by force, in an attempt to become straight. Victoria will become the first jurisdiction in Australia to outlaw the practice of psychological therapy or counselling to try and suppress or change a person's sexuality or gender identity. New laws will make it criminal for these types of therapies to take place and is expected to be a mix of civil and criminal laws and educative measures. Survivors of conversion therapy often live with acute distress, ongoing anxiety and depression, and powerful feelings of guilt. Tonight, I speak with Anthony Venn Brown, founder and CEO of ABBY, Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International, a network for GLBTIQ people from Pentecostal, charismatic, and evangelical backgrounds. A note that some of the content mentioned on the program tonight may be triggering for some people. For support, contact Switchboard on 1800 184 527 or QLife. You can access Thorn Harbour Health's LGBTI counselling services. Just head to thornharbour.org for more info. If you are in crisis, please call Lifeline on 131114. As always, we'd love to connect with you, so please get in touch at wellwellwell@joy.org.au to discuss this and all of our past and future shows here on Joy 94.9. This is Michael for Well, Well, Well.
For sexual health, mental health, and your overall well-being, this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well with Michael, and I'm speaking with Anthony Venn Brown, founder and CEO of ABBY, Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure, and thank you for having me.
It's a complex topic to unpack, but we want to start right sort of at the top of the list, I guess. When we're talking about conversion therapy, or specifically gay conversion therapy or conversion therapies impacting the lives of LGBTI people, what do we mean by the term conversion therapy?
Look, that is a wonderful place to start, Michael, because I think that there is a lot of confusion about this. Personally, I hate the term conversion therapy. And the reason for that is that, unfortunately, what's happened is that as that term has been introduced, it has broadened what people perceive and what people talk about regarding orientation change. And so, actually, I did a 3-month tour around the world last year, talking with various former ex-gay leaders, ex-gay activists, LGBT rights organisations. People have been involved in this for a long time, and asked every single one of them, what do you think of the term conversion therapy? And nobody likes it. What we're talking about today is there are different aspects. First of all, there is, within a therapeutic model, there are some therapists in inverted commas who are saying that they can work with people to change their sexual orientation. And so that is happening within the mental health professional world. Then, of course, within the religious context, that's really what we've been focusing on, and I have been for years, is that can involve a whole range of things. So there'll be a person's own personal attempts to suppress their sexual orientation through prayer, through faith, through study, reading books, a whole range of things. For other people, it might involve ministries with other people, with deliverances. There's been previously been support groups. There's been one-on-one counselling that's been done. Yeah, so there is a whole range of practices which comes under the umbrella of what we now, well, what's commonly been known as conversion therapy. In the religious context, I'd like to just call it pray the gay away.
There's also groups that will use sort of a different model, which is pray the lay away.
Yeah, so it was pray the gay away. I think what you're referring to is gay without the lay.
Gay without the lay, that's the one.
Yes, so that is a celibacy model, which is about suppressing their same-sex orientation.
Sure.
Because they see that as being part of their brokenness, or that it's evil. It's not a part of God's plan, or that sort of thing. Yeah. Yeah. So that's been a fairly recent introduction.
Now, you said there's a lot of people that have been working in this space for quite some time, and you're one of those people that's been in this space for quite some time. Can you share with us a little bit about your lived experience with gay conversion therapy, be that religious or therapeutic, as you mentioned before?
Sure. I'm getting old. I was born in 1951, but I've come to realise, Michael, the value of my age, particularly in this particular context. Because, you know, I'm currently writing about the history of this, and I can do something that other people can't do because I've actually lived through the entire era, 50 years of it. So in my final years of high school, I became aware that I was same-sex oriented and had some experiences with other men and with someone at school. And this was an era, of course, when that meant that mental health professionals saw that as being sick. Needed treatment, and of course it was a criminal offence. It's really, really hard to communicate the horror of living with that in the background as a teenager, but through the experience I was having, I ended up with depression, attempted suicide, and went to a psychiatrist. So that was my first, I guess, attempt, but he wasn't so much about, you know, changing. He just thought I was going through a phase. I just needed to have a better relationship with my father because that wasn't changing. So what happened was it was during the school holidays that I thought, well, God, I was introduced to evangelical Christianity, and I became a born-again Christian, believing that now God would give me the power to change that. Then I thought that I was free because it's quite an emotional experience. Then I went to New Zealand to Bible College, and in Bible College it reared its ugly head again. And then I went through exorcisms in 1971 over several weekends to cast the demon of homosexuality out of me. Then when I got back to Sydney, it was still there. And then I went into probably the world's first ex-gay rehabilitation residential program in 1972. So there were lots of attempts, and of course 16 years of marriage and children and believing that eventually one day I would never have these thoughts anymore. That's quite a journey. So, you know, when I resigned, I became a popular preacher, fell in love with a man, and then resigned from the ministry, and I had no way of reconciling my faith and my sexuality at that time. I didn't know that there was such a thing as a gay Christian. If I did, I probably would have thought that they were deceived anyway. So I was living with this belief that I would probably go to hell. I planned to commit suicide at the age of 50, 8 years from when I actually came out. So when I did find resolution of my faith and my sexuality, I didn't know any other ex-gay survivors, as we were called then. And I started a Yahoo group, which some people listening might actually remember Yahoo groups. And the Yahoo group was, that grew to about 400 people. And then when my autobiography came out in 2004, then I was actually inundated with emails of people saying, your story is my story, and out of that started Freedom to Be, and then now Ambassador of the Bridge International. So it's been a long journey, Michael.
Well, thank you, Anthony Van Brown. We'll be back to chat with you a little bit more in just a moment. This is Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9.
Keeping you in good health. This is Well, 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 Joy 94.9.
I'm continuing my conversation with Anthony Van Brown from ABBEY, Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International. Anthony, you've mentioned some of those aspects of those exorcisms and going to different places to try and have that expelled from you. So the process of becoming an ex-gay is fraught with turmoil and heartache. How did becoming an ex-gay or coming out after the experience of gay conversion therapy differ to that of, say, your peers that wouldn't have experienced gay conversion therapy? Was it a more difficult process because of that?
Very difficult, Michael. And what I've seen is that, you know, for most of the people who have been through this, myself included, that there is a period that I call the ex-gay closet. That there is so much shame attached to our experience. Like, nobody in my world really knew what I'd been through when I came out. I mean, who could I tell about that? I wasn't empowered. It wasn't resolved. There was shame around that. So for many of us, we go back to another closet. We have all these unresolved issues around, you know, trying to change our orientation around the faith thing. So there's still lots of conflict, which can take sometimes a decade or longer to get to a place where you feel comfortable to talk about it.
So you mentioned sort of these two specific groups. So there's the religious gay conversion therapy sort of groups, and then there's people that are either licensed or unlicensed therapists, counsellors, and psychologists and that sort of thing. Is it misleading or damaging for LGBTI people to label this practice as a therapy?
Look, yes, it depends what context we're going to be talking of. You know, if there are therapists, and some of them are licensed, who would still have the belief that homosexuality is there's something wrong with being gay, and that people will either be able to change and to become go into a heterosexual marriage, or that they will be able to suppress it in a celibacy model. So, we released a report which I believe you read last May. And there we revealed that even the Christian Counselors Association had now within their code of ethics that none of their members were to practice reorientation reorientation practices. So, but there are still some who, even though that's the code of ethics, will still believe that and will still practice that. And even, here's a good example. I know somebody who's a librarian, and this woman came to her looking quite upset and asked her, do you have any books on homosexuality? And the girl said, yes, yeah. And why are you asking? And, well, my son's come out to me as being gay, and I went to the doctor, and the doctor said it was all my fault. And so I need to find out some information about this. So there is this doctor was obviously a senior doctor. I know that examples where people have gone to see a licensed therapist, and they've said similar things. So it is still there within the mental health professional in a minority. Within the religious context, we couldn't call it therapy because it's not therapy. If you're in like a Pentecostal charismatic church, you might go to your pastor or youth leader or church leader for some counselling, and we've put that in inverted commas, because they're not necessarily trained counsellors. They're like spiritual advisors. So they would advise you, it's a spiritual thing as opposed to a therapeutic model.
I guess that sort of leads into my next question of what does this sort of practice look like in 2019? Where is it happening and who's performing it? So it sounds like there's probably a conception by some people that this is purely just happening in sort of right-wing church environments, but it sounds like it's still happening in our local GP practices. It's still happening in psychologists' office in some places around the country. Do we know sort of to the extent this is happening?
We don't have any data on that. At all at this stage. But so I just get stories every now and again where people will share with me what happened to them. So I'm assuming that that is still going on, but we don't have the data on that. And that would be good to get some data on that, but I'm not sure how we would get that.
For sexual health, mental health, and your overall well-being, this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
I am chatting with Anthony Venn Brown, founder and CEO of Abby Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International, and formerly of Freedom to Be, a network for GLBTIQ people from Pentecostal, charismatic, and evangelical backgrounds. Now, Anthony, we talked a little bit about conversion therapy before the break. I just wanted to sort of talk about some of the harms that are caused by this. You talked about your particular experience, but what are some of the harms to LGBTI people that can be caused by conversion therapies?
Well, look, when I started getting all these stories and, you know, I had my Yahoo group with survivors in that, I actually began to keep an Excel spreadsheet of all these people's stories. And what became clear very, very soon was that there were common themes. And the themes were, of course, depression, sometimes obsessive behaviours, sometimes self-destructive behaviours. Like, for example, if you have a belief like I did that I, you know, would probably go to hell, because of accepting my sexuality, in the background, you have no self-respect. And so you might begin to get involved in self-destructive behaviours, which could be unsafe sex, which could be substance abuse, a whole range of things. And, of course, along with the mental health mental health issues that people experience, of course, the depression leads to suicide, thoughts of suicide, and then suicide attempts themselves. And so, you know, these are the common factors. You never come away from the experience being a better person. You have been damaged, you have been hurt. And it can take years and sometimes a lifetime to try and work through some of those things. You know, I had my own PTSD issues that I'm constantly, you know, having to be conscious of and work with. So there's a lot of damage that can be done.
And what are some of those reasons that, obviously there would be a lot of people going into these kinds of therapies willingly, wanting to seek change, wanting to better themselves or rid themselves of those demons that you mentioned earlier. What were some of the reasons that, you know, you mentioned this Excel spreadsheet, what were some of the reasons that people gave for, you know, remaining in care or remaining with their church or remaining with their family?
Well, you know, so there's two things. Either you're brought up in the church, and we must remember too that frequently these practices happen within the context of Christianity, of Pentecostalism, the charismatic church, and also evangelicals, but not exclusively. You know, within the traditional church like Catholic, Anglican, it happens there as well. So if you've been brought up in the church, you know, everything around your world is your family, your friends, everything is about church and your Christian faith. And this is all that you know. And, of course, you've never, ever heard anything positive about being gay or that you can be gay and be a Christian. And so there is this inner conflict that begins to develop. And, of course, the acceptance or rejection of your sexual orientation or gender identity in your mind has eternal consequences. That's very, very heavy and can create an intense cognitive dissonance in people. So you've got the cultural aspect, you've got the family ties. If you converted and come into it, it's a similar sort of thing that, you know, you've got this sense of purpose. God's called me. I have a mission in life. God wants me to live the best life that I can live, and that part of that is not to be gay. So, you know, you've got all those factors all the time operating around you within that particular culture.
Just reflecting on that internal conflict and the cognitive dissonance that you just mentioned, to draw a parallel, for people that might be experiencing or have experienced domestic violence, it's not uncommon for those people to sort of return multiple times into a relationship before actually being able to leave it for good. Is that common amongst future, you know, ex-gay people or people leaving religious or therapeutic conversion therapies?
Well, look, there's an interesting experience that I've called closet hokey pokey. And that is say for example, somebody who has got to the point where they had married someone of the opposite gender and believing that that is like the final step for their healing, that when around midlife, there'll be this person inside them screaming out, "Let me out! I want to leave. Where do I get to leave?" And so this cognitive dissonance increases. Then they think about resolving that and coming out, but then they start thinking about the consequences and who'll be hurt and what will be the eternal consequences. And there's this thing that I've seen happen called closet hokey pokey, there where people are almost out, then they go back in. Then it gets too much and they might make a move again and then they'll pull back. So I'll get emails from people who are ready to do something about it, but then they'll just disappear off the planet. I don't know whether they are still alive, what was it that caused them to go back. All I have is an email address and if people are not responding, I have no way of knowing really where they're at.
Having looked across the document that you were talking about before with your sort of review or your report, it was interesting to me, a couple of the recommendations that you had were positively affirming in that it was suggesting that or encouraging people to tell their stories, essentially. So people that have left the church or have left a gay conversion therapy background, encouraging them to tell their stories. How important would you say the stories of ex-religious gay conversion therapy leaders are in enacting kind of change in that space?
Well, it's funny to mention it, back in 2007, I developed a strategy. I thought, how are we going to get over this, you know? And one of those things was the one that you mentioned about, and we have to get ex-gay survivors to tell their story. That's challenging. That's very, very challenging. Challenging for the individual because it can be re-traumatizing. Challenging because of what I mentioned before about the ex-gay closet that people go into about their ex-gay experience. And so, you know, there are those challenges around that to get former ex-gay leaders to apologize. That was also a part of the strategy. And in 2007, I had five Australian ex-gay leaders give an apology and talk about their change in perspective. One of those was the former Exodus leader in Australia and Asia. He had just resigned from that. And so he was doing something in Australia in 2007 that Alan Chambers didn't do in America till about 2011. So when you get, this is all a part of being a part of the strategy, get the people to tell their stories because the enemy is ignorance. And, you know, we overcome ignorance by speaking the truth. And when we start telling our stories about how we've resolved all this, our journey coming out and finding our place in the tribe and all these wonderful things that happen when we accept who we are and we find a place of pride as opposed to shame, those stories are very powerful. But, of course, the ex-gay leaders, who they were in Australia, it took me a lot of time to, first of all, find them, secondly, develop a relationship with them, thirdly, develop a level of trust where I could say, would you mind writing this for me? And then finally getting them to write their apologies, which they did for me, which is great. Which is the same time was their first set of apologies in the US in 2007 when I was over at the first ex-gay survivors conference in Los Angeles.
And what sort of impact do those apologies have on people, you know, either currently experiencing or that have come from religious gay conversion therapy backgrounds? Have you seen any sort of change from that?
Yes, because, you know, before all that happened, there was no alternative voice. I mean, you know, when my autobiography was released in 2004, there was no survivor story in print in Australia. And it still is the only one, as far as I'm aware, that's actually, you know, been published. So that's why these stories are important. And that was why my inbox was just inundated with emails, because for the first time, people were hearing stories that were their stories, and they go, oh, my God, I'm not alone. And then they would reach out. And so to have the survivor stories, to have the X-ray leader stories, my story out there, if you're in this world, in that religious world, and you come out, you won't be talking about your religious experience. So people keep quiet about that, and therefore they feel very alone in their experience. That's why we need to have stories. I mean, you know, I still get emails and messages on Facebook and people contacting me who are reading the third edition now and going, this is fantastic. You know, I had a guy just message me the other day and he told me that he tried to read my book 9 years ago and he's just now read it. When it was handed to him 9 years ago, it was too much. It was too much about the conflict he was going through as his marriage broke up. But now he read it, and he just was raving about how much unlearning he's had to do himself and how resolved he's felt, because he related to the story. And our journeys are all so similar, Michael.
Looking after the health and well-being of the LGBTI community, this is Well, 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 Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well with Michael, and I'm speaking with Anthony Venn Brown from ABBY, Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International. How does media impact sort of our journey towards dismantling that, you know, the ignorance behind this practice and raising awareness? I mean, there's been a great deal of writing on the matter, your book, for example. But then we've also got films like the recently released Boy Erased. There was But I'm a Cheerleader as well. And even on the most recent season of Drag Race this past season, they had a contestant talk about their experience, not just being an ex-gay, but being an ex-gay church leader as well. Like, what does that sort of say for our wider communities?
Well, I think it really reflects that we're living in an unprecedented time, you know, where this is being exposed. I know the challenges that I had when I first started telling the story, but this is an unprecedented awareness with, you know, you've got Nicole Kidman and Russell Crowe, you know, in these movies. And so suddenly it's become, I guess, more mainstream that people have realised, well, this is going on. What, this is going on in 2019? They can't believe it, yeah. It's good to have this exposure now and create awareness.
Yeah, and I guess bring it to a wider audience beyond just, you know, us sharing stories amongst ourselves as an LGBTI community. So taking it to the wider community so that, you know, future families of LGBTI children will have sort of the awareness and the knowledge of you know, how to look after their kids properly, I guess.
Correct, yes. And it's very much a part of what we need to be working on is helping parents to understand, you know, when your child comes out as gay, lesbian or trans or bi, you know, this is not something which is a reflection on your parenting or that you've failed and that there needs to be love and acceptance.
Anthony, I wanted to talk about what's been happening sort of here in Victoria in this space. So obviously in 2017, we had the Victorian government instructed the new Health Complaints Commissioner to launch an investigation into banning religious gay conversion therapies. And in 2019, just recently here at Pride March, our Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews announced a ban across the state calling conversion therapies bigoted quackery. I want to talk about the ban that we're potentially looking at here in Victoria. How do you sort of see that looking? We don't have a clear, obviously, view of what this ban might look like. How do you think it could most effectively be put into practice, I guess?
You know, that's going to be the challenge for us, Michael. What will that look like? Because, you know, what we are talking about here, if we're talking about a ban, we are talking about banning people's particular religious belief system. But how do you ban the practice when that's going on inside a Christian community or a church or a youth group that we're not a part of? And the people that are experiencing that at that particular time are not in a place where they're going to say, this is wrong. Because they want you to have acceptance. They believe, and their belief already is that this is not what God wants for them, so they want to change. So there are a lot of challenges ahead with this. I'm not saying, of course, that we should not proceed with this. I'm just saying that this needs to be very, very well thought out. We need to engage the faith community with this as well. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of work to do. I think it would actually be very helpful for us to have a national task force on this, because you know there are other states also looking at moving or following Victoria's lead in this way. And you know, for us to work collectively on it would probably be a good thing nationally and help all the states so we don't keep reinventing the wheel all the time. If the thing is banned. I mean, that says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does say a lot to people go that this practice is wrong. In America, the banning that is going on is not within a religious context. I'm not sure if people are aware of that. You know, we read all the time about this state's banning this country, this city, this county. The banning is with licensed therapists that are licensed by the state and... Yeah, and it's always with minors. So, you know, if we're going to be tackling a religious belief system that says that you are broken because you're gay, we need to do some very deep thinking and strategizing about how that is going to be approached.
Keeping you in good health. This is Well, Well, Well. Joy 94.9.
In the recent report, the Preventing Harm, Promoting Justice, Responding to LGBTI Conversion Therapy in Australia, that was released by the reporters from the Health, commissioned by the Health Complaints Commissioner, there were a couple of recommendations about what they suggested this ban might sort of entail. And one of those was prohibiting any conduct by professionals, including social workers, unregistered or registered health practitioners, teachers, and all that sort of field, that might be aimed at changing, suppressing, curing, and healing a person's sexual orientation or gender identity. Do you think there's a benefit in targeting other individuals? So that would obviously entail banning social workers and teachers from indoctrinating people in that fashion, but it doesn't seem to mention people of, you know, faith leaders and that sort of thing. Do you think there's a benefit in targeting those individuals, or does this issue sort of fall more broadly outside the church?
Well, look, it is outside the church, and I've just recently done a webinar with PASPA, which is the Psychologists and Counsellors Federation of Australia, and also Relations Australia, and Australian College of Applied Psychology, and so with their social workers. So what's happening at last is that I'm getting opportunities to go into these places and work with these people and give them an explanation about what it means to be a person of faith and what are the conflicts that they will experience and what are the issues, very specific issues that they will face and how to resolve them. So there needs to be more education within those frameworks, very, very much so. And each of the mental health professional organisations need to come out with a very, very strong statement, but not just a strong statement when something happens in the media, but actually make sure that that goes right through all their membership and followed up with training as well. That's going to help. Outside the church, outside to work with the church is a whole different ballgame. You mentioned the organisation that I founded, Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International. So our role is to reach out to churches and engage them in dialogue. And that happens at times. Other times it doesn't happen. It's challenging. But, you know, I know from when I was a preacher and a pastor myself, you know, that I wasn't going to be sitting at the table with someone who's going to attack me. But I would sit down with somebody at the table with somebody who was prepared to talk and to be respectful. And engaging the churches and Christian leaders in dialogue in this area is the way to go. And that's going to require some time, because you've got to build trust, you've got to build respect, and it's not something that happens overnight. And for churches or denominations to move from being anti-gay to being gay-affirming, and they move through steps of welcoming and being accepted and finally affirming, that can take several years. It's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah, and the next point, the next recommendation on the list, which I'll just touch on, is, so it doesn't mention those teachers and therapists specifically. It's more broad in saying sort of any person, where they might be targeting minors or people who have are particularly vulnerable to coercion, people with cognitive impairment, intellectual disability, that sort of thing. In your opinion, does religious gay conversion therapy, or the more therapeutic side of thing, do you feel like it impacts minors more than their adult counterparts?
Well, it begins when you in puberty, when you start to realise I'm same-sex attracted. And if you're in a church culture which says this is unnatural, this is not what God wants, something's gone wrong in your development that has caused either sexual abuse or something in the family that never been loved or should have been loved. So, it begins right there in those formative years.
And the next point is a little bit more positive in saying that it would be recommended to sort of carve out beneficial treatments or practices aimed at supporting LGBT people. Now, that doesn't mention specifically either in a church setting or in a therapeutic setting. But what sort of are some of the beneficial practices that might already be out there, stuff like the work that Abby is doing, or stuff that we still need that might be yet to be implemented, I guess?
Yeah, well, the other groups, like the Brave Network you had in Melbourne, and what we had was proven to be. What I discovered quite early in the piece was that people needed to connect with other people who had similar stories. This would be a part of their healing. Without that, then there would not be the development that there should be. On our website, we've created a space for survivors to tell their story and to create an online community, like I used to have years ago. So those things are there. And also, I think that we need to be working very much with LGBT service providers to make them aware and conscious also of the specific needs of LGBTI people of faith and how to work with those. Because if you don't come from a faith background, it can be very challenging to really understand what that's all about.
And the last point that is part of the recommendation, I think this is probably the bread and butter that people were sort of looking for when these recommendations came out, was creating an offence that criminalises any attempt to remove a person from Australia for the purposes of conversion therapy. So taking, a young minor, for instance, over to somewhere like the States or otherwhere internationally to sort of have that work done elsewhere. And what they're sort of recommending is that that be the criminal aspect, whereas other matters be more civil matters. So things that would happen here in Australia, unless they involve, abuse, that it would remain a civil matter. What's your opinion on that?
Because I was reading through the report, I thought that's excellent, to have it. Because I know of examples where that's happened within some ancient cultures, that the mother has taken the son off to Hong Kong, where he would be seeing a therapist there, or in China, because within the Asian culture, the son is not meant to be gay. And there's a very, very strong, cultural influence on them to change their orientation or to not be gay. So when I read that, I thought, that's really good. Of course, once again, there is a challenge with that is the child being taken against their will? Or is this something the child wants as well? Because, my family is everything. And if I accept my sex orientation, that will mean my family will reject me. So once again, I always come back to this one thing, is that the enemy is ignorance. And we're going to overcome ignorance by education, by information, and training, and getting as much out there about these things as possible that people can access.
Now, as well as Abby, there's a lot of other people doing lots of amazing work in this space. Is there anything else you'd like to mention or direct people to in reference to this topic if they want to find out more?
Sure. Look, you know, we have a report we released in May, which is on our site. And of course, the La Trobe, the authors of the La Trobe study and the Human Rights Law Center, that's been great work and lots of wonderful information there. And of course, you know, there's the Brave Network in Melbourne with Nathan Despot, which has been doing some great work within in this space. And, Chris Sabs, who's been, you know, a little bit like the poster boy for, survivors, has been doing great work out there as well with his petition on change.org. So, you know, it's great that we have, for a long time, I was the only voice out there, but it's wonderful to have all these voices now, and we're all working towards the same thing.
Thank you so much, Anthony Van Brown, for joining us on the program to discuss gay conversion therapy here on Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. If someone wants to get in touch with the work that you guys are doing at Abbey, where can they find more info about that?
Look, I'm on our website, www.abbi.org.au. We have a whole range of resources, audios on the Bible verses, people's individual stories, and we have an online community we're developing of survivors as well. So just go there. You will find a heap of information. If there's something specific you can't find, actually, I think probably the largest resource in Australia around conversion therapy is there on our site. So if there's something specific you can't find, just contact us and we will direct you exactly to where to get that.
Well, thank you again, Anthony Van Brown, for joining us on the program. It's been exceptional to have you on to discuss gay conversion therapy with me. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity once again.
Thank you. This is Well, Well, Well here on Joy 94.9.
Looking after the health and well-being of the LGBTI community. This is Well, 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 Joy 94.9.
Thanks again to my guest, Anthony Van Brown, founder and CEO of Abbey, Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International, and author of A Life Unlearning. You can find out more about the content on tonight's show by heading to Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International at abbi.org.au. Preventing Harm, Promoting Justice, recommendations via the Human Rights Law Centre website, hrlc.org.au. The Brave Network at thebravenetwork.org. And all of the resources mentioned on the show will be up on our podcast page, so simply head to joy.org.au/wellwellwell. You can subscribe, and if you do, we'd love you to leave us a rating on your favourite podcast platform and get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you, wellwellwell@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.